This crowd rises to its feet.
Vaccaro slammed it home.
Garland left wing, three ball.
Perfect.
Garland went to the lane, locked the Mobley, pow.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Pow with the left hand and a foul.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Kaz Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Chase Down is presented by Fubo TV. Watch over 100 channels of live sports and TV for half the cost of cable. There's no contract, annual commitment. Try for free at FuboTV.com. The Cleveland Cavaliers split their weekend series against the Denver Nuggets and Phoenix Suns, but we are now officially at the halfway point of the season. 41 games in the books, and joining me to talk about those games as well as the Cavs at the halfway point is my co-host, Carter Rodriguez. Carter, how you doing, buddy?
Doing all right, a little under the weather, so it's going to be a little more of a low energy, Carter, so I'm going to try not to lose my voice before a busy day of meetings at my day job tomorrow. So you're going to get a little NPR, Carter, maybe a little, speak a little higher in my register, Carter, so I don't wear down the vocal cords talking down here where I tend to talk. No, overall, I'm doing okay other than the illness. A real take care of business fourth quarter against a shorthanded Suns team. And, halfway point of the season, it just feels like it really snuck up on us. I always forget how far before the All-Star break it is. And then I was thinking right before we went live, it's not a halfway point for us because we got some postseason basketball coming this year.
Oh, yeah. I'm comfortable at this point saying that there's going to be postseason basketball. Drag me if I'm wrong. I'm already going to be emotionally dead if that's the case. So it would just be splashing water on me as
I'm
standing in the rain.
It's already dead.
it's at this point, I think a lot of the data, when you look at where the Cavs are through 41 games, suggests this team is really, really damn good. And I honestly, like, looking at the two games over the weekends, I thought the Cavs did a good job against the Nuggets. It actually kind of reminded me, like, looking at the way Darius Garland played, looking at the way they competed defensively, in some ways it kind of reminded me of the Hawks play-in game, especially for Garland, where I felt like, hey, the effort's there, they're playing well, the shots didn't go down. And you look at the missed opportunities at the free throw line, some of the mistakes that they made, and just Denver hitting a lot of shots, as they are a very good team, that kind of felt like the difference. Whereas the Phoenix game, they came out hot. They kind of took their foot off the gas for two quarters. And then it was almost like a 2017 Cavs performance where, all right, fourth quarter started. Let's just erase all hope. We'll clamp them down. We execute offensively. We get this out of hand in a hurry and just take care of business. Do you agree with my assessment of those two games?
I would definitely agree. I was surprised JB was so disappointed in the team after the Nuggets game. Obviously, they put up 136 offensive rating. So, it's hard to say that the Cavs played awesome, but I thought their effort was really good. I thought Jarrett was great against Jokic. I thought Denver's shot making was unbelievable. Yet another in a stretch of hot, uncontested shooting games for Cavaliers opposition. I thought the effort level stayed pretty good all the way through. The free throw thing, that's you hope that's a once a season type of night.
Yeah.
Where just everyone,
it wasn't like great guys in Phoenix. Yeah, it wasn't great in Phoenix either.
Yeah, but like it wasn't even like splitting free throws. It was like, five or six guys missed two in a row on outings, and against an offense that potent, you just don't got a shot. The game ended up getting out of hand enough at one point that you go, okay, it wasn't just the free throw shooting that doomed them, but it certainly kept things from looking better than it did in the end result, because I thought they were running pretty good offense. Obviously, it's nice to see that Darius dodged a bullet despite getting hit on the hand again. And he wore the splint against the Suns, which for my own mental health, forget Darius's physical health for a second. For my own mental health, feeling much better about that, Justin.
I want to talk to you actually about Darius playing in that game, because when it was announced that Chris Paul was out for the Suns, I was like, oh, you know what? We could probably rest Darius. And then he went through warm-up, said that he was good to go. And I was like, oh, you know, like, does he need to play? And I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, well, Kevin Love was playing with a fractured thumb because they said they couldn't do more damage to it. And obviously that wasn't the case. Yeah. Or that was the case because he didn't have any setbacks or anything like that. And I was like, oh, is Darius isn't going to look like Denver, where I thought Denver, he actually had a really good game. He was creating well for others. He was competing on the defensive end. And it was just missing some shots, right? Like, I think there was a difference between shooting poorly and playing poorly. And then he came out against Phoenix, and he was so hot, and he was so good against the Suns. I was like, oh, yeah, no, that's fine. I got to remember that sometimes we just kind of have to trust the medical professionals on the team, because he was absolutely a valuable contributor out there.
Yeah, he definitely was valuable. I don't think that was ever in question. I think it's really just trying to evaluate. By the way, a dunk, how about that? I just think it was, you know, it's anxiety. And obviously a one game rest isn't going to help a sprained thumb heal. But I am glad he wore the wrap. You know, obviously, you know, all the reporting saying that, you know, he wasn't super comfortable in it and he didn't like it. Same with the goggles after his eye injury. And, you know, sometimes, like, I do think this is a spot where I think he was like, huh, maybe my comfort can't be primary here. And yeah, I still thought he had a really good game wearing the splint. So I think that was probably good for his confidence, knowing that he can go out and be a really positive performer, even if he has to wrap up his thumb while he waits for it to heal. And obviously he had a really good game. So it was definitely nice to see him out there, even though, you know, every time he drives the lane and people are pawing at the ball, I'm holding my breath. But that's just what it is to like a star player.
Yeah, it really is. And especially Darius, who seems to be hit every single game, was hit in the face both against Denver and Phoenix. I mean, obviously this is a guy that studies a lot of film. You see it in how he plays defense and the improvements he's made there, the reads he can make as a passer. He's got to study the refs, maybe, like, you know, just find out like what their favorite place is to get coffee and get them a gift card, or just be like really friendly and personable, because I feel like poor Darius, the amount of times that he gets hit in the face and then just kind of looks shocked at the refs after. I know there's a billion things going on at the court, but it's tough to watch our guy take a beating like that.
Well, you know, it's also like, it's just a natural byproduct of being a smaller guy. You're gonna get beat up a little bit more. Like, LeBron probably took, you know, all these hits and more over his career, but he's just such a big guy that you don't maybe always notice it. You don't always feel it. But I mean, the face shots are,
it's a bit much. It's a bit much. Especially I don't know if when the whistle isn't even blown.
Yeah, and I don't know. It's weird because it's not like he's getting, I don't think they're trying to mug him for the most part. I don't think that. I'm not sensing much malice.
I don't think so either.
Herky jerky style. Maybe it's just he's just the wrong height for some of these like incidental contact. But I don't think I've ever seen anything like it, bro.
I'm not comfortable with all these references to height. Give some less love to us 6'2 kings out here. But yeah, I don't think it's something intentional. I don't think it's something malicious. It's just kind of one of those unfortunate things. But you know, it does feel good to win a game where Isaac Okoro makes as many threes as Darius and Donovan combined. Isaac going 4 of 6 from the 3-point line. Obviously, there's a couple factors to that. Donovan Mitchell didn't have to do a whole lot against Phoenix, which I thought was really nice. Didn't have to play a lot of minutes, was rested against Denver, but everyone else kind of stepped up, and it was just kind of an easy night for Donnie. And obviously when Isaac's out there hitting threes, really being assertive, that makes things a whole lot easier for everybody else.
Yeah, 4 of 6 from three, and you know, it feels like Isaac's been a little more comfortable shooting the ball as of late, even on the nights where it hasn't gone in. You know, it's not like you kind of watch him out there aiming like he was earlier in the season, it feels.
Yeah.
But, you know, 4 of 6, I mean, like, if he can do that once out of every 4 or 5 nights, that's a meaningfully improved player for this team.
Yeah. He was taking 4 shots a game for the majority of this season, right?
And yeah,
never mind taking 6 threes. So that's super encouraging. And it's funny that when we talked about how good he was finishing at the rim, he's had a couple misses in close.
A couple bad ones.
Yeah, a couple misses where I think obviously you're maybe some of those he's looking to draw contact or whatever the case may be, but he's missed some in tight, but he's been good at the rim for his entire career. I'm not worried about that. But it is nice to see that the confidence is there, right? That he is taking these shots, and it's now been 10 games since he got that start against Dallas, which seemed to kind of turn the momentum for his season around. And he's shooting 44% from the three over the last 10 games. Obviously, that's very, very helped by a 4-6 outing. His season three-point percentage went up 3% after that one game, which I mean, is ridiculous, but that also shows you how ridiculous it is to really put like a ton of stock in that when he was a 35% shooter from three last year. And we are still dealing with small sample sizes when it comes to that 3-point volume. But obviously him being confident enough to take those threes is one of the bigger developments, at least when you're talking about how well he works in that starting lineup.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I mean, it was a season high in attempted threes for him. It's just nice to see it kind of come together. I mean, it wasn't even a great plus minus game for him, but, you know, I mean, the step back on the left wing was also nice and saucy in closing time. So you want to see more out of that from him as the team gets healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, plenty of reported rumblings about Dean Wade's imminent return, Ricky Rubio's imminent season debut.
Oh,
and
can't wait for that. I can't wait for both of those guys.
And when those guys get back, though, it's going to, you know, everything's going to get crunchier. It's going to be a tough battle for minutes for yep. Jetty, Okoro, Lamar. You know, maybe one of those guys is in the rotation when the team's fully healthy, which, you know, luckily, as we've said many a time, and in fact, I still have to remind myself because I always over-index on it. Team's almost never healthy in the NBA. I mean, that's just how it is.
Someone's
healthy. Always dinged up. But with that said, like when it comes, you know, when the team does have all their pieces together, it is going to be a real battle for Isaac. So him impressing in these minutes is really, really important for his ability to get on the floor.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, you're right. Teams are never healthy. We're always going to have some sort of injuries, and you want to be in a position where if, hey, maybe a player could benefit from some rest, that you're able to give it to them. But on the other hand, and we saw this against Phoenix, JB, if he feels that the normal rotation is lacking something, or if he's just looking for a spark, it's nice to know that you can go to Howell Neto. You can go to Lamar Stevens. And I thought both Howell and Lamar were awesome. The Cavs went on a run when those guys were in, and we know JB likes to ride the hot hand. So that's exactly kind of how I see those guys being used. Who knows? Maybe Ricky Rubio isn't going to play back-to-backs, and you start to get into a spot where you're comfortable having that backup point guard in the regular rotation. So when he's out, you want to replicate that and maybe play Howell Neto a little more, right? Like there's a lot of possibilities, and that's one thing that the Cavs just haven't had a lot of. But with Howell playing so well, sharing the Junkyard Dog chain, Carter, I think it's time for you to have a little bit of a victory lap. So I'm going to clear the floor for you.
Listen, when you know ball, like I know ball.
I already hate this. I already regret this. But proceed.
You just know what a winning player looks like. And, you know, Howell is not the best shooter in the world, not the best athlete in the world. But people were talking about this man after a couple bad outings on where just he happened to have a couple unlucky runs or came into a game he wasn't expecting to even play in. People treating this man like some rando on a two-way. I'm like, this guy has been in the league for 8 years. You're not in the league for 8 years with this dude's frame and athleticism unless you're really good at basketball.
Yeah.
And he is legitimately really good at basketball. I think he's an underrated finisher. By the way,
he's also proof of my height watch conspiracies because his actual height barefoot is 6'1", and there's no way that Darius and Donnie are the same height as him. So they are definitely taller than 6'1".
No way. And like, you know, you just see a guy that understands how to organize the offense, understand how to get people in the right spot, plays unbelievable. I mean, he's a better defender than I thought he was. I'll say that. Like mm-hmm. even, and I don't know if it's just a byproduct of his role on this team where he's like, I'm going to be the irritant. Cause I don't remember him being this nuts in Washington or in Utah.
Yeah, on that side I remember of the floor. Good defense, but I don't remember kind of like this TJ McConnell like yes, really blowing comp. Things up full court basically.
Yeah. And he's just a really, really helpful player. And, you know, I kind of maintained that, you know, I would have been fine with Neto even if they hadn't signed Rubio, if he was just our backup for the year. And this was during the offseason. And I still kind of feel that way. Like, obviously, I'm very excited for Ricky to come back. Ricky is, you know, a different caliber of player historically. But, you know, Neto has done what you need a backup point guard to do. He can play 10, 15 minutes, which is all you need on a team like this, and keep the train on the tracks. And on some nights, he can kind of flip the momentum and change the energy of a game that might be going a little bit sideways. All you need from that position.
Yeah.
Not a star, but he's a helpful role player, and he's been that for his whole career. One thing I wanted to say about last night that I thought was notable, I think it's the first time I've ever seen JB run a 10-man rotation on purpose.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, at least in a while, right? Yeah, if you're looking for, you know, if you're looking for ways to find extra minutes for guys, like, this is the minutes distribution you're going to want to see. Darius was the minutes leader on the team at 35. Mobley played 34. Mitchell played 30. Karras played 28. Everyone else just 23, 18, 15, 14, 11. Like, I thought it was a really nice management. And obviously, I don't know if JB really meant to go to a 10-man, but he kind of realized he needed Neto to flip the energy of the game.
Yeah.
But that is kind of the road, I think, to seeing him expand the rotation a little bit.
Yeah, and as the Cavs get healthier and there's more options to go to that you feel better about and more guys that are deserving of minutes, because that's probably the important thing, right? Like, I think it makes sense because you talk about Neto earlier in the season not necessarily looking super comfortable at first, but as Neto gets more comfortable, as Karis LeVert continues to get look better and play better and kind of excel in that bench role, as Isaac Okoro gets comfortable and plays better, like, the more options you have and the more guys that are deserving of minutes, the deeper you feel comfortable going in your rotation. So that's a really, really big thing. Carter, there is another victory lap that I don't think you're even aware of, but I think we should give a shout out because we don't talk about it often. But we don't get a lot of draft stuff right, and you were a big proponent of Brobley, Isaiah Mobley. And I think he should get a little bit of a shout out because looking at his G League stats, 10 games, he's basically averaging 23, 10, and 4. He's taking 3.5 threes a game at 38%, which was one of the big things that we wanted to see, right? Expanding that range to the NBA 3-point line. And he's shooting 53% from the floor. So shout out Brobley.
Yeah. Obviously great to see the 3-point range, I think, is the number one differentiator for him. And being in the league long term, and not because he's not a great athlete, but you know, his IQ can carry him a really long way if he can also be a spacer.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to see more whenever I watch, I do see a lot of post ups. You know, I hope that I get, and obviously those are going to be on scoring plays, but you know, I want to see him operating out of the high post, kind of being a miniature version of what Evan can do, which is be a high post hub. And then also just a pick and pop shooter and creator from distance. So really hoping he can get that, you know, get it figured out and translate that up a level of competition. Because, you know, it's certainly not easy to post those numbers in the G League, but it is a different thing entirely to translate them up to the NBA level.
Yeah, and right now G League is what we have to go off of, so it's certainly encouraging to see him playing that well. And speaking of high post hub, Evan Mobley, I thought Phoenix was one of his best games in a while. Like, I thought he was awesome on both ends. I thought his defense was basically at an elite level, the way that he was bothering guys. And he got, I believe, 4 assists in the first quarter. And I just continue to be impressed by his playmaking improving throughout the season. And as he gets better at it, I've definitely noticed that the Cavs are using it more and more. So going by assist percentage by month, in October, to start the year, Mobley had an assist percentage of 10.2. In November, that went up 1% to 11.1. In December, 14.6. And already in January, he's at 16.9. So almost 17%, a 7% increase in his assist percentage since the start of the year, if this continues. But to me, it just goes to show this is what growth looks like. It's not that you come out of the summer and all of a sudden you just take a leap that's immediately evident. It's you what you learned in the summer, what you added to your game, it slowly kind of blends into the team's overall offense, especially when you're a team that has expectations and is trying to win all these games and has a lot of talent. But as the season goes on, you're seeing Mobley used more and more as a playmaker in the high post, and his passing continue to improve. And to me, that's one of the most important things that we're looking at for the Cavs in the second half of this season.
Yeah, I really liked what he gave them in the Phoenix game. You know, it wasn't, you know, the Phoenix game was interesting because it had a lot of really good performances, but, you know, a pretty unexceptional set of box scores.
Yeah.
But I don't think that should understate, you know, the quality of the game a lot of these guys played. And I thought Mobley was, you know, an absolute hub. I thought he really bothered all these Phoenix players whenever they did happen to venture in near the rim. And despite their insane three-point night for an opposition, I thought he was also contesting well on the perimeter. I don't think you can ask much more of Evan.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I mean, just like Mobley is a successful hub for the offense, Zoom is a successful hub for all our podcasting needs and communication. Support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. Carter, I don't know about you, but I'm completely blown away that we're 41 games through this season. I was looking at the Cavs last year through 41 games, and they were really good. But I was surprised that the Ricky injury happened as soon as it did, or as early into the year as it did. It wasn't even at the halfway point. But after 41 games, last year's Cavs were 23-18. They were third defensively, 14th offensively, and fourth in net rating. This year, 26-15. So you're improving by 3 wins. They are first defensively instead of third, 10th offensively instead of 14th, and second in net rating instead of fourth at this time last year. And to me, when you look at the injuries that the Cavs have had, if you look at player games missed last year, I believe they missed 230 games. They've already missed 180 this year. So we're catching up to that total pretty quick. But when you look at kind of the injuries that they've had up and down the roster, the fact that teams are taking the Cavs more seriously this year, that there isn't that element of surprise. And when you look at the strength of schedule as well, I think this has been an incredibly impressive first half of the season.
Yeah, it really is. They haven't had the best luck. They haven't had the worst luck either. But, you know, what we have seen has been really, really high-level play when the team has it all cooking. I think those two early wins against the Celtics really set the tone and expectations for the team. And really, that whole 9-game win streak.
Yeah.
Or eight. Was it eight or nine? I don't remember. Eight. You know, winning out of your first 9 just kind of set the tone. And then, you know, you go through that stretch in early November where you lose 5 in a row and you go, oh, maybe they're coming back to earth. But, you know, those were 5 really close losses. So, like, I feel like this team has really settled in just, I would say, a tier above what the basic, you know, the overall NBA commentary might have had them at, which is, you know, I don't think many folks have them in the top tier with Boston Boston, Milwaukee. Sorry, I'm feeling under the weather. It's a little foggy.
Yeah.
I don't think people have them with those two.
Yeah, Brooklyn's entered it, although it's worth noting that KD is out for a month.
Yeah, quick validation note for me. Another little victory lap. Just call it the pot of victory laps. I was on team, everyone's underrating Brooklyn. And even as they, if you remember that, I was saying, like, everyone was like, oh, I wouldn't toss them in that first year. I'm like, their floor was 44 wins last year, which is like the cap, which was the Cavs' dream season. If things go even half right for them,
yeah,
then they're going to be great. And guess what? They're great. And that's with things not going half right. Obviously, health matters a lot. KD missing an entire month matters a lot. But I was right. I know ball. Anyway, you know, but to actually get back on topic, people didn't think that this team was going to be in that top tier, but I think a lot of people had them kind of in the third tier, you know, in that 6-8 range in the East. And there, I think everyone believes that they belong where they are right now. And I think they've proven that with their play over the course of the year. Like, I think this is no fluke. And if anything, I think they've gotten a little unlucky.
Yep. Yeah. No, I completely agree. I mean, we're halfway through the season. The sample size is large enough. Like, when you are second in net rating, you're a contending caliber team. Like, you are that good at basketball, right? Like, this is a really, really good roster. Donovan Mitchell has taken a massive step forward. I think Darius Garland has improved. I know not all the numbers necessarily back that up, but the fact that the points per game are basically the same, the efficiency, I think he's a little higher than last year, while going from number one, where the entire universe was revolving around him, to playing with Donovan Mitchell. I think that's really, really encouraging, because what we've seen from Garland is second half of each year, he usually gets better. He usually takes off, right? Like, he's averaging more points and assists than he did pre-All-Star break last year. And I would expect, as he, hopefully he gets healthy here and the thumb heals up and he gets an extended run with Mitchell. But if he does, I think he's going to take off in the second half of the year. And the fact that the Cavs are as good as they are with the fact, like, the 17 starting lineups they've had in 41 games, that's ridiculous. Like, there hasn't been continuity. They've had guys in and out of the lineup, and it hasn't really mattered in a big way. Like, they've been able to weather a lot of storms, and I think they've shown a lot of resilience, more than I would expect for a team that went through such a massive change in adding Donovan Mitchell.
Yeah, I mean, I think we both thought that there would be a little bit more of a transition period, and I think they fit really, really well together. It's been, you know, not without its own challenges. I mean, some of those 17 starting lineups are also because the team just hasn't found one that works great yet.
Yeah.
You know, like, if their original inclination had been right, Karis would have been starting the whole way through, and, you know, Karis hasn't really missed any time, and maybe they would have had, you know, half that many starting lineups.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, the only real changes that have been made was Karis to Lamar and the Lamar to Okoro, right? So that definitely is a factor. And maybe if Dean Wade was healthy, you'd get another one there just to give him a look. That's a point well taken. But at the same time, like, I think it's primarily due to injuries, because four of those spots are spoken for, and we feel really good about them.
Yeah, and it's interesting having the fact that we're pretty sure the core four works well together, even though that starting lineup hasn't quite figured out. Obviously, I'm going to talk about it for the 500th consecutive podcast. That's what I really want to see in the second half of the year, is I want to see them run teams off the floor with their first and third quarter. They're good enough to. They've got the talent to. They just need to find that complementary fifth piece, and they got to play smarter and better to start games too. I think some of it is lineup, but some of it is just, I think sometimes they've come a little flatter, intensity wise than they did last year. I think last year's team could more reliably be expected to be tryhards.
Yeah, because they really needed to. Yeah, that was the difference.
So, like, I think it's just the natural, you know, transition from going from a team that has the target on their to becoming a team that has a target on their back.
Yeah. Yeah. I think JB's probably had to play shop class teacher a little more than he did last year and tell these guys to stop screwing around. So I definitely think that's
a good reference. Just.
Thank you. That's certainly the case. But what I like looking at this year's team compared to last year's team, and this is what you were hoping for with bringing in Donovan Mitchell, is just there's more stability. Like, the fact that you look at the on-off splits, and for the season, the Cavs are still better with Garland off the court. They're better with Mitchell off the court. They're better with Mobley off the court. And that's because all these different lineups have worked so well. And it's not a case of, well, they get outscored with Garland or Mitchell or Mobley on the court and they don't when they're off. It's varying degrees of success. Last year, the offensive rating would drop off 10 points, almost 11 points when Garland was off the floor. This year, it only drops off a fraction of a point. when Donovan Mitchell is off the floor, it only drops off 2 points, right? And that's because you've been able to stagger those guys. I think the Mitchell drop off, the only reason why it's probably more substantial than the Garland one is Mitchell's played more games without Garland. So you don't have that second unit that with Darius on the court, right? So, and the Cavs are 2 points better with Mitchell off the court. That seems ridiculous because of how good he's played. And they're 1 point better with Garland off the court. But to me, that's all positive because the net rating is awesome with them on the court. It's awesome when they're together. And this is what you're hoping for, right? Like the design of this team isn't for martyr ball where one guy is just, it runs absolutely everything. Everything runs through the, through that player. When they're off the court, it falls apart. You want to have, if this team, if the vision of this team comes to fruition and everybody hits their potential, you want to be able to run offense through Garland, through Mobley, through Mitchell, even through Allen and Rubio and hopefully Okoro. Like, I love the fact that Okoro was getting some ball handling reps in the Phoenix game. Like, you want it to be a little more equal opportunity and less reliant on one player. And I think when you're trying to build something that's sustainable with long-term success, having that kind of a foundation is really, really important. And I feel like they're on the right track.
Yeah, and if you ever wondered, guys, if Justin is a selfish, podcast co-host, selfish person, in fact, you didn't tweet those Darius Donnie on-off stats yet, good for you. That's I don't know if I got that kind of self-control, because that's just free, a free couple RTs. that you chose to turn down that boost of chemicals in your brain in order to save it for the pod, because those are great stats, man. Those are awesome. And it really matters, you know, how many teams have not been able to replicate that with their best player. Donnie has, you know, far and away, I think, been this team's best player this season.
Yeah.
And most teams do not have the luxury of being able to let their guys sit down for 2 seconds. Yeah. We weren't
able to replicate it with LeBron and Kyrie and Kevin Love, right? Like that's, and I think even though there's frustration because at times like Jetty and LeVert haven't been consistent and Kevin's had stretches where he doesn't hit shots, that bench unit's been good. Like part of this is the bench unit has been really good. And obviously the starters are playing the harder minutes, but we're not giving up leads when Jetty's on the court and one of these guys is resting, right? Like that's really, really important. And that offensive stability and the overall stability that the Cavs have had, when you consider that this team doesn't have great spacing, when it has had a lot of injuries, not a lot of continuity, I think it's a real feather in the cap for the coaching staff that they are 10th offensively. Like they're one of, I think they're the only team with a top 10 offense and defense, or if there's another one, it's only one other. Oh, Memphis. Memphis is up there too. But the fact that they are a top 10 offense and defense, despite what we all understand is still kind of a flawed roster when it comes to supporting cast, when we have had a lot of turnover, like to me, that screams a team that's really well coached.
Yeah. I've liked what they've done this season. I think anyone who doesn't think JB's running pretty good offense isn't really paying that good of attention.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the last couple of years, the offense was relatively vanilla. And when you're dealing with a coach where that's your introduction to him, and you're watching, you kind of wonder, okay, is this vanilla because of the personnel? Or is this vanilla because the coach doesn't got that juice?
Yeah.
You know? And whether, and you know, and I'm going to say the coaching staff, because obviously, as we know, it's not a one-man job.
Mm-hmm.
I think this year has really proven that was not the case. Or if it was the case, he has supplemented his staff in such a way, or leaned on his staff in such a way that has, you know, helped strengthen a weakness. Because I really like what the Cavs are running, even on actions where they're not, where they don't generate a good look. You know, building these split cuts in to take advantage of the great gravity of their two shooters at the guard position, and even Jetty Osman a little bit. The way that they are able to leverage the two-man game between Kevin and Jetty off the bench, even. Little details that just tell me, like, hey, this team kind of has a plan, you know? And in fact, if I have a criticism of the team, it's that they go away from that plan late in game sometimes and start, you know, playing walk it up ball.
Or
because I think they developed an offensive identity.
Yeah, and sometimes in those late games they don't go to Mobley, right? And I'd be really curious to ever have like a conversation of, okay, well, who is making the play calls in those situations? I mean, you can definitely tell from JB swinging his arm that he wants the tempo to go up, but I think part of it too, and this is something I'm mindful of this time of year, is now that football season is over, like the Brown season's over, you're going to have more Cleveland fans that are just support Cleveland sports. And first of all, welcome, if this is your first podcast tuning in at this time. But I think sometimes we do, like, we as a basketball media, and I know we're not actually basketball media, but I think there's just not enough context that goes into all of this stuff, because even the stat you were sharing today about open threes given up, the Cavs were giving up the second fewest wide open threes over the last 10 games, where no defenders within 6 feet, and that number per game was 12.6. Someone that doesn't follow the NBA as closely as us is going to say, you gave up 12 wide open threes, that's really bad defense. Where us as sickos that are watching all the time, you understand, hey, the NBA average is actually 17 per game. And sometimes good defense is funneling it to a bad shooter late in the shot clock. And that bad shooter taking an open shot is better than a lot of the other options because the overall talent is so high. It doesn't take into consideration when that occurs in the shot clock, right? So rather than like talking down to the casual fan that may not understand it, I think sometimes we got to do a better job of exploring that wider context of what league averages actually are. Because it's funny when you get a comment, when I shared that the Cavs had the best defense in the league, some people were like, I don't care what the stats say, my eye test tells me they're the worst. And sometimes like that's just a product of you're only watching the Cavs when you watch NBA basketball and you don't watch it that frequently, which, I mean, there's no right way to be right or wrong way to be a fan. That's just one of those things where if you're not paying attention to the same extent that we do, that's something that's going to fall through the cracks.
Yeah, I got curious just while we were talking about, because the Cavs currently have the best defensive rating in the league at 109. Last year, that would have put them as the seventh best defense in the league. The year prior, that would have put them at the sixth. The year prior, that would have put them at the 10th.
Mm-hmm.
Like, offense around the league is just bananas right now, man.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, it's really hard to get stops. The league is so talented. The shooting level is so high. And, man,
and also
it's just going to look different on a night-to-night if compared to what you're used to even 5 years ago.
Basketball is also, it's a really tough sport to just casually come in and understand what's going on. Like, the reason I watch a second time is because in live action, it's really hard for me to pick up exactly what's happening. Like, I will recognize sets and stuff, but it's so easy to watch the ball, whereas everything that's happening is usually, when it comes to plays, it's usually off the ball, right? It's the seasoning, as Nikias would call it, how you disguise your actions. And J.J. Redick had a great pod with Fred Van Vliet where he was talking about even Tom Thibodeau, like, runs a bunch of, like, split cuts now and things that make the primary action that they're trying to run harder to detect at the start of the game. Like, if you asked a casual viewer how often do the Cavs run isolation, they'd probably say 40%. When in reality, you look at the frequency of how often this team calls ISO, and it's 6.5% of their overall possessions, right? Like, so much of it is the actions that set up a pick and roll, and that action might be so that when Darius gets the screen from Jared, the initial action freed up an opportunity for someone that's going to be the outlet for Darius to make that read to the corner, or maybe a cutter, or to destabilize the defense so that it's an easier action to get Jared or Evan a touch on the short roll so they can make a play for themselves or others. Like, there's so much that's going on, and it's really tough to figure out that on your initial watch, especially when you're an idiot fan like myself who's just so invested in the result that I just want to see if the ball goes in or not.
Of course, I don't need to watch twice because, as we've established, I know.
Well, you don't even watch once. Did I just step on your joke? Did I beat you?
No, that's fine. That's okay. Fine. I skipped last night's game live to play Dungeons and Dragons. I think I can hold an L every now and again.
God, I was going to let that slide. I was going to let that slide on the podcast, but I'm disgusted by you.
That's fine. I watched the game on VOD after.
I love, sorry to be self-indulgent here, but I love when we were discussing it and you're like, you would hate it. I'm like, no, I'm really competitive. And when you said it's not really about winning, nothing has gotten me more turned off than that one sentence.
I'm very new. It was only the second time I'd ever played. And the second you were like, oh, that sounds like it'd be fun. I'm like, not for you, buddy.
You know me too well.
Not for you.
I love a game. I need to be able to be the winner at the end of it. That's my whole deal. But before we wrap this up, Carter, I do want to talk about what we want to see from the Cavs for the second half of the season. You kind of already touched on it where you were mentioning that you'd like to see them do well first and third quarter, get out to better starts. And I mean, that ties into everything else we're talking about, right? That if you start better, you're going to be able to go deeper in your rotation because you hopefully have a lead. But beyond that, is there anything else that you'd like to see, or is that kind of the one thing that you're really looking for?
In the more immediate term, really what I want to see is Ricky and Dean come back and look good, look healthy. So Kobe has a month to evaluate what he has and what he needs to do.
Mm.
Trade season is coming up. You know, deadline is the... What day is the deadline?
9th, I
you
think. Know. February 9th?
Then, yeah. It's a month away.
Yep.
And obviously, you know, I don't know if they need to make a move, but, you know, it's something that you want data points. You want to be able to evaluate what you have. So if Ricky comes out hot out the gates or cold out the gates, I guess it's all data, but you got to see these guys all play and get actual run together. And then you can kind of figure out how aggressive you want to be. Something I've wanted to talk about but haven't had a chance because luckily we've gotten to focus on basketball,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to trade talk, which is fun and, yeah. You know, much, much preferred for me. But one thing I think not enough people are thinking about when they're thinking about, oh, Kobe just needs to go trade for this guy or this guy or this guy. He's always been an aggressive guy at the deadline. I don't think people understand how much harder it is to trade when your team is good.
Mm.
It so limits the pool with whom you can trade. There is not a top 8 team in the East that is likely to want to make a deal with the Cavaliers. You know, like, because why would you do that? If you're trying to compete, why would you try to help another team address its needs? Yeah. Even if you're addressing your own.
It might go further than that. Like, you say top 8, but like Toronto, I believe, is 12th or 13th. Like,
yeah, you think Masai Ujiri is going to send a player he likes here? No. So
maybe. You never know.
It is going to be, you know, it's going to be a really interesting thing to evaluate. And I just, everyone who is expecting, who is leaning on precedent to say Kobe makes a trade almost every year. Well, this year might be a little different. Mm-hmm. And this is the difference between making a trade as a third team and just sneaking in, because who cares if the Cavs get Jared Allen? That won't come back to bite us. They're not even good. You know, like, those are the easier trades to get into, right?
Yeah.
No. It's a lot harder when you are actively looking to turn yourself into a proper title contender.
Yeah. No, it's a really smart point, and it was a great opportunity to set me up to mention that Toronto's in 12th, which is always fun to...
You're welcome.
Always fun to remember that. I definitely... Trade season is upon us. We're starting to see more and more rumors. Listening to Chris Fedor and Jake Fisher, I thought it was interesting. Both Fisher and Fedor said that the team still speaks very highly of Isaac Okoro. And Chris on his podcast said that he doesn't see the Cavs trading Okoro unless they were getting a long-term permanent fixture in their top six.
Yeah, I don't see it either.
I mean, the upside, right, is still... Like, it's one of those situations where guys on the rookie contract, oftentimes they're more valuable to the team that they have them than they have value on the open market. And I think you've definitely seen the flashes from Isaac where you want to see what he can do with this team. You know that he's beloved in that locker room too, right? Like, I've seen Donovan Mitchell's Instagram. I know what's going on there. Another thing,
we should probably... Water balloon fights today.
Another thing I'll mention, just because I consume a lot of the trade discourse, is if there's a target, like, let's say a Bojan Bogdanovic, that the reported asking price is a first round pick, you can strike that guy off the list because the Cavs cannot trade a first round pick. And that goes for all these other guys like Malik Beasley, I think has been mentioned as someone that they want a first round pick, Sadiq Bey, like all these guys. That's not really an option for the Cavs. And I know Fisher and Fedor mentioned Tim Hardaway Jr. Mark Stein reported that as well. And it seems like the holdup there is whatever additional compensation Dallas would add to it. And also, you just don't make a move until you've examined all the options and find out what the final asking price is and that. But I do think it's interesting because we talked about how the bench has been playing well and Karras has been really settling well into his role, right? So we'll see how he does with Ricky when Ricky comes back, right? Like, does that help or hurt him? There's so many questions and so many data points and so little time with just a month left. But I wouldn't be surprised if nothing really materialized at the trade deadline, just because it doesn't seem like there's a lot of sellers in the league and the Cavs just don't have a ton to work with. Like, the big move was Donovan Mitchell, and I've seen some people talk about potential trades and is this guy going to be a needle mover? The only needle mover that exists for the Cavs, in my opinion, is how much better Darius gets and how much better Evan Mobley gets. Because Donnie is Donnie. Feel great about him. Jared is going to continue to steadily improve. I love that he's hitting the Marc Gasol, like, little 12-foot jumper. I think that's a big addition for his game. But really, those two and where they're able to take their game, I think that's the only thing that really moves the needle. Everything else about figuring out the supporting cast and the supplemental trades and that, it's so that that's not a talking point. That it, when they go to the playoffs, the discussion isn't, well, there it was 4-on-5 because the defenses weren't respecting someone, right? Like, defenses are always going to cheat off someone. They cheated off J.R. Smith because the Cavs were so potent. So that's going to happen. But you don't want that to be that big of a storyline where you're in a situation like last year where Isaac was afraid to take those shots, and it seems like he's taken a positive step in that direction. So we'll see what ends up happening there.
Yeah, I'm at the point now where I don't think I'd be disappointed if they didn't make a move. I just think the market is too dry, and I just don't want to make a move just to make a move, you know. And I don't think the team should feel that kind of pressure right now. I think that they are really, really good as currently constructed, and they have nothing but time. You know, the worst thing you can do is make a move just to make a move, compromise flexibility, send a popular, you know, maybe a well-liked player out of your locker room for, you know, a marginal upgrade. I think they have to be really, really thoughtful. This is, again, Kobe's job is so much harder than it was a year ago. You'd think that would be get easier as your team gets better, gets harder.
Yeah.
Because expectation, you know, it's the grain of sand in the watch that, you know, in the gear that messes up the entire operation. You got to be really, really smart with what little flexibility you have.
Yeah, and you have to make evaluations with guys on expiring contracts, right? Like, even you might have to take a risk because there's not really an option that you see in free agency. So, hey, maybe we move a guy that has 1 year left on his deal for a guy that has another year or two on his contract, just so that you were able to do salary matching down the road in a year where you do have a first round pick, right? Like, there's so many things that go into it and there's so many things to consider. And again, with so few sellers reportedly, I've definitely had my expectations managed, and I'm also just pretty happy, right? Like, I don't, obviously, this team could really use volume shooting on the wing, absolutely, but this team's also really good. And the other thing, for people that maybe haven't tuned in for a while, or this is your first year back with the Cavs since LeBron was here, the standard's different. Like, the floor and the number of contenders is higher, but you don't have to be a perfect team to win a championship. Like, last year's matchup in the finals was Andrew Wiggins as the second best player on one team and another team that didn't have anyone that can dribble, right? Like, you're not trying to beat the 2017 Warriors with Durant, where any tiny flaw in your roster construction is going to get exposed. Like, it is different now, and all these teams are imperfect but very talented. So it's the Cavs are certainly no exception to that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be a really, really interesting back of the year. And that's kind of the fun part about not having seen Dean for a while, not having seen Ricky at all. you know, you could argue Ricky Rubio is our trade deadline acquisition.
Yeah.
Because it's going to be really important to see how he kind of integrates into the team.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And what I want to see the second half of the season is just more Mobley playmaking. Because I think that growth we're seeing, that month over month, the increase in his usage in that spot, that's so important because, to me, Evan Mobley growing as a playmaker is going to be their best chance to beat the defenses they're going to see in the playoffs, whether it's Boston, Milwaukee, even Brooklyn. Brooklyn's long as hell. They don't have a lot of like size and weight, but they have a lot of length. So I think Mobley improving as a playmaker is going to give them their best chance because, like we said, this team on paper, statistically, this is a contending caliber team. And the biggest difference between this team and the other teams is experience and finding consistency. So the more options they have, the more guys they can lean on, the better the chances are of pulling off some upsets in the playoffs and shocking us and everybody else. Yeah, well, fingers crossed. The schedule also gets easier too, so looking forward to that. Next game, Cavs take on Utah, basically the day that most people will be listening to this. Unfortunately, that Colin Sexton's not going to be available. I just saw he was ruled out again. Would have been nice to see him, but Utah has slipped. They're actually below the Lakers in the standings now too. So their season has kind of taken a turn for the worse, unfortunately. But we know that's a potent team, and the Cavs are going to have to bring their A game. So hopefully they do that. Big thanks to everyone tuning in live on YouTube. We really do appreciate all of your support. Like, subscribe, click the notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via podcast and want to support us, you can leave us a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of a review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there. Until next time, go Cavs.